Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Lamed Tes. We're on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. We're going to be starting towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going to be starting with the words Amar Abaye before we get to Halach of Abaye. So let's chazer just a little bit. Here in the third paragraph, we're discussing Kenas that goes to, rewarded to, a victim of either Ones or Pitui. Ones, if in the event that a man rapes a woman or Pitui, he seduces a woman, where that means that ultimately she consents to the act. So in both of those circumstances, the Torah levies a fine. That fine is located two times in the Torah, once in Parshas Mishpatim and the second time in Parshas Kisetze, in Parshas Mishpatim. So that is where Pitu is described, and in Parshas Kisetze, so that's where Ones is described. There are going to be differences between the fine as it relates to Ones and the fine as it relates to Pitu in terms of whether or not the payment is due immediately or, in fact, it's going to be back-ended to the end of their marriage. We're going to be discussing that later this morning, meaning that's coming up in the upcoming Mishnah. But right now, our focus today, right now, is going to be on the kenas, on the punitive penalty that he has to pay. Now, also later this morning, we're going to be talking about the compensatory damages that he has to pay, meaning the act of onis and the act of pitui are chavala. That's a physical assault that he's doing to her, and as a result of that, he has to pay damages. So damages are assessed as per the instructions of the Gemara in Baba Kama, the 8th Perek, in terms of how to assess compensatory damages. And so that also is coming up a little bit later on as well. We're not discussing right now the nizke chavala, the damages that are compensatory in nature. Right now we're only focusing on the kenas. What do we know regarding a kenas? So what we know is that a kenas in general, that is a punitive fine assessed by the Torah. Kenas can also be described as when the chachamim are unhappy with a person and are going to give him some sort of punitive measure. But in our context over here, kenas is just a simple reference to the punitive fine that is assessed by the Torah. So in a number of instances in the Torah assesses a certain finite amount of money that has to be paid over and above that of compensation. Okay, otherwise known as punitive damages. So the kenas as it relates to onis and pitu is 50 shkalim. Good. So this is what we know this already, meaning this is all just by way of review. Now, who is going to be the recipient of that money? So this is also some basic information that we all need to know. And that is that when it comes to a girl, when she's at the stage of both Kitana and Nara, she's under the jurisdiction of her father. Her father is entitled to collect all of her earnings. Her earnings would include, I know I sound like an accountant right now, but her earnings would include anything that she earned in terms of work, anything that she earns in terms of gifting, doesn't matter how the money comes to her, even damages that come to her. So the father is going to be the recipient of all that money. The father owns all of her earnings. That is the Torah structure of the relationship between a father and a daughter when the daughter is either in the stage of Katana or the stage of Nara. And the kenas would be no different, meaning a kenas is going to go to the father. Then when she becomes a bogeres, she now becomes an independent, and as such, she is going to be entitled to receive all of her own earnings. Good. So this is just basic information that we already knew, but it sets us up for the upcoming Gemara. Now, before we start with the upcoming Gemara, just one more piece of information, and that's based on a Gemara that's also upcoming on Daf Mem Aleph. The Gemara and Mem Aleph says as follows. Let's say a girl was violated. Let's say Ones occurred, and it occurred while she was an Ara, which means now that there is a obligation on the Ones to pay 50 shkalim. And then the court takes its time. And I'm not being critical of the court, meaning whatever. This is just how the world works. The court took its time. And by the time the court was able to process and assess the damages and assess the kenas, so now at this point in time, she's already a bogeris. So who is now going to be the recipient of the money? The answer, the Gemara later on is going to tell us, is very clear. She is going to be the recipient of the money. Meaning, even though, obviously, at the time of the damages, in this case, at the time of the ones, obviously, the father would have been the recipient of the money. But when it comes to kenas, kenas is not compensatory. Kenas is a punitive fine, and it only is on the books only when it's assessed by the court. Now, the court has an obligation to assess it, but it doesn't materialize until the court actually assesses it. As such, if, let's say, the court assesses it at a later point, which, of course, they will, meaning, by definition, the court's going to be assessing at a later point. But that later point happens to be now where she's a bogeres. She will now become the recipient to be able to be rewarded the kenas. That is what we are going to be learning later on. Now we're set. Now we're ready to learn our Gemara. Amar Rabbi, so we find ourselves on Islam and Chesam and Beis, and starting with the words Amar Rabbi. Amar Rabbi, now it happens to be that we saw this halacha already earlier in the Gemara, but we're going to be discussing this in much greater detail right now. Amar Rabbi Bala Omesa, so let's say a man is minus a woman, and she was at the time a Nara Basula, and she, and obviously there is a Knas that would have been enforced by the court. However, she dies. So Rachmana, she dies. And let's say she died before she became a Bogeris. So whatever. As far as the Abai is concerned, it doesn't really matter. But still, she dies. So Pater. So now, as a technicality, so he is now no longer on the hook to pay the Knas. Now again, as far as the Niske Chaval is concerned, I'm firmly of the belief, I think I'm right about this, that of course he has to pay the Nizkei Chavala because that's compensatory. And we're not talking about the compensation right now. We're just talking about the Knas. So in terms of the payment of the Knas, it will be, this is a contingency that is built in to the Knas, and that is that she has to be alive. Shenamaran is based on the Pasuk. V'nasan lavi anarava lo lavi amesa. Okay, so it's a reading of the Pasuk, it's a drasha, that she has to be alive in order for the Knas obligation to be in existence. This is the halacha according to Abaye, and then the Gemara points out, not everyone's in agreement with this. Most of the Peshitta Le Abaye, Mi Baile Le Rava. So that which is obvious for Abaye is not so obvious for Rava. The Gemara goes on to explain. The Baye Rava asks the following question. Yesh Beger Bekever, Oin Beger Bekever. So the way the question is phrased is as follows. Let's say that a woman was subject to Ones. Now there is an obligation of Knas. And then we haven't gone to the court yet. And Rachmanis, she dies before she leaves the stage of being a Nara. Okay. Again, it's something we all know. We're learning Suvas, which means that we've done this time and again. But let's just quickly review. From 0 to 12, the girl is a Katana. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's a Nara. And from 12 and a half onward, she's a Bogeris. She was violated while she was a Nara. She then dies while she is still a Nara. And now, the question becomes the following. Obviously now she's no longer developing. She Rachmana, she passed away. But at least now from a halachic standpoint, is her calendar still moving? In other words, do we reckon the fact that had she been alive, she would have been a Bogeris? And does the clock still tick halachically? That's the question that Rav is asking. Lamai nafkamina, what practical difference does it make? So stay tuned as the Gemara is about to explain. So yesh beger bekever udemenahave, or odema ein beger bekever udaviahave, because now we want to know who's going to become the recipient of the kenas. Now already you could see right away that Rava disagrees with Abaye, meaning Abaye says that once she dies, that's it. If the kenas has not yet been assessed, so then that's it. The kenas is just simply waived. That was Abaye's halacha. Clearly from Rava over here, that's not the case. Rava is of the position that the kenas is still in existence. There still is a requirement, an obligation on Beis Din to levy the Knas. And now the only question the Rav is asking is who's going to be the rightful recipient? Is her father going to be the rightful recipient? Or is her child going to be the rightful recipient? Now her child is a little bit of a struggle because when did she have the child? Remember, when she was raped, she was a virgin, which means obviously she did not have a child before she was raped. So she had a child after she was raped. But now we just move into a really technical issue, and that is, there's no way she could have been violated and after that have a child all within the period of Nara, because Nara is only 6 months. And the Gemara is going to make exactly that point. And so we're going to run through this next piece of the Gemara, because all the Gemara really is saying over here is that it's impossible for her to have been violated as a Nara and then be able to have a child and then die all while she's a Nara. That's all within a six-month window. It can't happen. Umi ma'abra, so here we're running through this quickly. Now, if this sounds familiar, it should sound familiar. Just give me 1 second. This should sound familiar because we've done this pretty recently. We did in Yavamos. Okay, good. So anyway, umi ma'abra, she can't give birth. Vatani rav bibi kamei derav nachman shalosh nashim mashamshas b'moch. So three women are going to use contraception. Elohein ketana mu'abras menika ketana shemitesabre v'tamos. A ketana, if she allows herself to become pregnant. So she's just simply not physically strong enough to be able to bear pregnancy, and she's going to die. A pregnant woman, if she becomes pregnant, So, in other words, and yes, the Gemara here is suggesting, asserting, that there's a possibility of pregnancy, post-pregnancy. So what's going to happen is that the developing fetus inside of it is going to be at risk because of the new pregnancy. And if a woman who's nursing is also going to be using contraception, because if she becomes pregnant while nursing, so that will stop the milk flow and her current child is going to be at a serious nutritional risk. Either way, Ezu Katana, Mibasachas Asrei Shana V'Yamechad, Ad Shem Asrei Shana V'Yamechad. And when we say Katana over here, we mean from 11 to 12. Because Pachos Mikam V'Yesar Al-Kain, Mishamesh Kedarka V'Olachas, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Below 11 years of age, so there's no way she's going to get pregnant. Above 12 years of age, if she becomes pregnant, that's great, meaning good, and she'll be able to bear the pregnancy. So it's from 11 to 12 where she's at risk, meaning there she could become pregnant and she just simply won't be able to bear the pregnancy. Now, according to the Chachamim, she'll just, in other words, the risk level over here is really low, and this is a tolerable risk. She doesn't have to use contraception in the circumstances. This is a low-level risk that she'll, in fact, become pregnant. Anyway, what comes out from the Gemara over here is the following, is that her first opportunity to become pregnant is when she's a Nara. And so there's no way that she could be an Anesses, she'll be violated, and she'll have a baby afterwards. There's no way. And also, she had to have died while she's a Nara, meaning that's the case under discussion. And maybe she became pregnant when she was an Ara, having given birth while she was an Ara. The Gemara says it can't be. V'shisa yarchi mikayalda v'amr shmuel. So ein bein naris labagros ela shisha chadashim. So you know that the period of naris is only 6 months. And I say you know. It's funny. The Gemara, the Torah never says how long naris is. Meaning we know there's a stage called naris. We know it's the halachic adolescence. That we know. But the Torah itself never gives a time value of how long Nairus is. The only way we know how long Nairus is because of the comment of Shmuel. But throughout Shas, nobody argues with Shmuel, meaning Shmuel's position seems to be absolutely accepted, but it's certainly a point of interest in that this is the only source that we know how long Nairus is. And V'amar Shmuel, Ein Bein Nairus, L'Bagus, El Shisha Chadash, V'chitem, Abatzehu, Deleka, Aval, Hatfeika. Maybe Shmuel saying 6 months minimum. Maybe Shmuel meant it could be longer than 6 months. But ha ela kama. The Gemara immediately rejects that because Shmuel says the word ela. So where are we right now? We're stuck. Meaning we need a case in which she was a victim of ones. There's a kenas at least that needs to be litigated and obligated by the court. Rachmana, she died while she was an Ara, and now the question becomes the following, and that is that even though she is now dead, but let's not call it a biological clock, let's call it a halachic clock. Is her halachic clock still ticking? In that now, even though she's post-mortem, now does she become a bogeris, post-mortem, at which point in time now, she is going to be the beneficiary of the kenas, but of course she's no longer alive, so maybe her child is now going to receive it. The problem, of course, is that there's physically no way she could have had a child. Okay. Chaim, I'm sorry, you had a question.
No, I just wanted to know, if she had a child, doesn't the father lose his control over her?
Yeah, but what the court is litigating is the kenas that she was due at that point in time. She didn't have a child, meaning, and she was an Ara at the time.
So therefore, the
kenas
might go to the father.
In other words, the kenas absolutely goes to the father, but that's only if the court assessed it while she was an ara. Meaning, what we know is that if, let's say, the delay takes so long that the court is only assessing it after she becomes a bogeris and she's alive, she becomes the recipient. That we know. That's a given. So over here, the question on the table, it's an unbelievable question, is that, well, let's say she died. But are we still able to look at her halachic clock ticking, even though she's no longer alive? So that's the question on the table. At which point in time now we want to know if, in fact, we do, and the court assesses it while she's a bogeris. Post-mortem bagras, And now who's going to be the recipient of it? Is it going to be the father or is it going to be her child? The only reason why the Gemara says child right now is because we want another address. But now the problem, of course, is that there can't be a child from a from a technical standpoint, meaning she can't have a child in 6 months' time. Fine. So Ella Hachikami Baile. So the Gemara says, fine. So I'm going to ask the same question, but in other words, there are two options. They're not going to be the father versus the child. There is no child. The two options are going to be, it's either going to be the father or it's going to be nobody. So the Gemara says, exactly. So Yesh Beger Bekev O Paka Av O Domein Beger Bekev O Lo Paka Av. Okay, so that's the so either she becomes a Bogeris post-mortem, at which point in time now she's the recipient, but of course she's no longer alive, and therefore the Chiyuv is gone. Alternatively, there is no Bogeris, meaning once she dies, that's it. Her status now is basically locked in as a Nara, and therefore even if months or years later the court finally assesses the Knas, it's going to go to the father. So, good. So that's one way to phrase the question. Marbar Ravashi by Lehachi. Marbar Ravashi phrases the question a little bit differently. And that is Miso Sabagras, O Eino Sabagras, Teku. Now, Marbar Ravashi, the way he phrases it is that when she dies, does that immediately bring her to the next level of being a Bogeris? Meaning, is Misa equivalent to her becoming a Bogeris or not? So if it is, so then obviously the father no longer is going to be receiving the kenas, and again, she dies without heirs, so the kenas just simply goes away. Alternatively, maybe Misa eno osa bagros, which means that the father is still going to be entitled to receive the kenas. Okay, so fine. So Marbar Ravashi asked the question a little bit differently. What comes out from all this, as Rashi points out very clearly over here, is that Rashi, I'm not reading it inside, but Rashi and Marbar Ravashi, is that if you go back and you look at Rava again, clearly, Rava is working with a totally different assumption than Abaye. Abaye's assumption was that once she dies, that's it. The Knas goes away, period. Nothing more to discuss. In other words, as just a contingency for the Knas to even be litigated and assessed by the court, is that we need her to be alive. The Torah demands that she be alive. That's Abaye's assertion. And Rava is saying, no, not necessarily. Rava, in fact, assumes that the obligation is still there. And the only question that Rav is asking is her halachic clock still ticking even after she dies? Is she a Nara? Is she a Bogeris? Does she graduate from being a Nara to Bogeris even post-mortem? But Rav certainly is assuming that the obligation, the Knas obligation, is still there even after she dies. So Rav fundamentally disagrees with Abaye on this particular point. Okay. Lama Tesaman Aleph, we are a little bit less than halfway down on the Amud, and by mine Rava me Abaye. So Aba Lav Nisarsa Mahu. So let's say she's a victim of Ones, and afterwards she accepted Erison. And this is before the lawsuit, before the Knas, and now what's the halacha? So Amale Miksiv Nasan Lavi Anara Asher Lo Arusa. So the Gemara says, well, what are you talking about? Meaning just because she accepted Erison from somebody else, that's going to inhibit her ability to collect knas. That's ridiculous. Torah never said that. So la'atzma miksev anasan lavi anara asher lo nesua. So the Gemara says, well, let me ask you the following. Let's say not only does she go through erusin, but she goes through nesuin. So what happens when she becomes the nesua? That now cuts her off from her father. As I pointed out in the beginning of Shir today, so a Kitana and a Nara are under the jurisdiction of the father. The father is going to be collecting any and all of her earnings. However, the father now is cut off at what point in time? Not while she's an Arusa, but rather when she's a Nesua. If she is betrothed and goes through the second stage of marriage with another man, so that now severs her ties with her father. She's no longer under the jurisdiction of her father, which means now that the money is collectible by her. Now, of course, because she's married, so there's another complication in that all of her earnings go to her husband. But I'll tell you what, let's keep this as simple as possible. We're just focusing on the father. Once she's married, the father's cut off. So the Gemara says, fine. So hachi hashta. So I don't understand, says the Gemara. So by Nisuin, the father's cut off. And by Erison, the father's not cut off. But the Gemara says, yeah, but that's a false comparison. So hasam ho v'ubagos motzim rishos av. So ma bagras ba la ubagra latzma af nisuin ba levenisays latzma. So the Gemara says, of course, but the comparison's a false comparison, because just look at what happens. When she's a bogerstu, she becomes an independent. She's cut off from her father. And when she's an asua, she's also cut off from her father. That's why, if Basin has not yet assessed the kanas, and in the interim she gets married, both stages of marriage, so just like if she were a bogeris, so the kanas would go to her, same thing by nisuin as well. Ela eris, the mikam afkin rishus adav legamre, but we know with erisin does not cut the father out. How do we know that? So atana nara murasa avio bala mafirin l'nedareha, because we're just using nedarim as a way to show this by neder. A girl makes a neder, she's an arusa, a nara hamurasa. So who could be made for the neder? It's her father, and it's the husband as well, and collectively the two of them are going to be necessary in order to be made for the neder. All we're showing over here is that the father is still in the picture even during erisin. Okay, that's all. Lama Testament Aleph, we are at the new Mishnah, a little bit more than halfway down the Amud. Amafatan Osin Shlosha Dvarim Va'ones Arba'ah. And finally here, the Mishnah is going to be highlighting the basic differences between Onis and Pitui in terms of the ramifications. In terms of what Onis and Pitui is, so that's very simple. Onis is basically where she never consented to the act. So in other words, this is what we would describe as rape. And Pitui is where at first she was not interested, but then he solicited, he propositioned, and he really went to, he really tried to try to persuade her, and eventually she capitulated. So that's pitui. So in both circumstances, the ramifications are basically the same, but there are some differences. And now the Mishnah over here is highlighting the few differences that exist between onis and pitui. So amefatan osin shlosha dvarim va'onis arba pitui. So in terms of compensation, so there are three categories of compensation, and for onis there's four. Hamafata no semboshes begamu knas. Now, as far as the payments that are going from the mefata, the seducer, so he's going to be paying boshes, so that's the embarrassment. Pagam, that's the actual depreciation, meaning she was a basula, now she's no longer a basula, so she depreciates in value. And the assessment of that value, so we would look as if she were on the market, And being sold. Obviously, we're not selling her, but in terms of assessing it, we would look as if she were, and whatever that depreciated value is, that is what's called pagam, and also the kanas as well. Now, if you're remembering back in your days of Baba Kama in the eighth parak, there are a total of five compensatory damages. So over here, we're only highlighting two of the five. Kanas, obviously, it's its own separate category. Kanas is the punitive damages. That's the fine. But in terms of boshes and pagam, so what are we leaving out over here? So there is ripu and sheves. In other words, the medical bills and the time of recovery. So over here, for obvious reasons, there are no medical bills and there's no recovery as well. So those two are just simply not applicable. What about sar? What about pain? No, exactly. Meaning what we're discovering together right now is that that's going to be the basic difference between onus and pitui. Whereas onis, there is going to be an assessment of pain. Pitui, there's no assessment of pain. Why is there pain by onis and why is there no pain by pitui? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to articulate that distinction. So, most of a love onis and osin as a tsar. Now, when it comes to onis, so there's one more category of payment, and that's tsar. Okay, so what we just figured out, the Mishnah here spells it out, is that so when it comes to the onis and the ma'anis, so he has to pay one more category of payment, and that's going to be tsar. Ma bein onis lemefata. So, other basic differences between onis and pitui. Onis no sin es tsar. Mefata einu no sin es tsar. Now, I know that sounds repetitive, but basically, it sets us up for the Mishnah to list other differences as well. Ha onis no sin miyad ve'hamefata lechishiyotze. So, when is the payment going to be made? So, when it comes to onis, so he pays it immediately. He pays to the father of the girl immediately. When it comes to pitui, that's when he divorces her. Hold that thought, by the way, in terms of the language of the Mishnah. Lechishiyotzi, when he divorces her, what, are they automatically married? Hold that thought. And ha'oni shows the ba'asitzo v'amafate imratza lo'otzi motzi. Now, as far as onis is concerned, he has to stay with her indefinitely. Meaning for the onis, the punishments are threefold. One, meaning above and beyond just the general compensation that he needs to make, But number one, he has to pay knas. Number two, he must marry her. And number three, once he marries her, he may not divorce her. And that's what the Mishnah here is describing. He shows seba atzitzo. He has to drink from the pot. It's an expression. It basically means that as long as she consents to the marriage, so he must marry her, regardless of whatever state she's in. But the mafata doesn't have to remain with her. Mafata may divorce her. Keitza shows seba atzitzo. So the Mishnah is just giving a description of what does it mean, that he must remain married to her. So afilu chigeres, let's say she's lame, afilu isuma, she's blind, afilu himugashchin, or she's with boils. So under those circumstances, it doesn't matter. He must remain married to her. Nimsa badava erva, but let's say she's mezana, she commits adultery. Oshe enarui lavo b'Yisrael, or it's a law that he's not allowed to marry her. Enarusha lekaima, so then he can't marry her. Shenemar velo si elisha, isha ru'uya lo. It has to be a woman that the Torah permits him to marry. But outside of that, any physical deformity, anything that might seemingly be unpleasant, so he still must marry her. Okay, tsar demai. Okay, so a number of things that need clarification in the Mishnah. So we're going to be starting off the Gemara's discussion regarding tsar. By pituis there is no tsar, by onus there is tsar. So the Gemara now wants to give a definition. In other words, when we're saying pain, what exactly is the pain that we're compensating for? Amar avu d'shmol, tsar shechavta gabe karka. So the Gemara first starts off by suggesting the pain of throwing her down on the floor. So maskal of Rabbi Zera me'ata chavta gabe shirai machanami depater v'chite machanami. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's say you don't throw her on the floor. I mean, in other words, let's say it's a bed. So you want to tell me now that there's no tsar? And the Gemara says, and maybe that's right. The Gemara says, but it's not right. That Tanya, we know, the Braiser, Rabbi Shimon, Ben Yehuda, Omer, Mishim, Rabbi Shimon. Ones and Mishalim es atzar, the Mibnei Shesof, Alif Tsar, Tachas Bala. So there is a Tana, right? Obviously, it's not our Mishnah. But there is a Tana who is of the position that there is no tsar when it comes to onus, because ultimately, anyway, we're just talking about relations, and they're anyway going to have relations together as husband and wife. So there's no tsar according to this Rabbi Shimon. Amru lo, and the Chachamim say to him, Eino dome nivas bonos nivas baratzon. That's a false comparison. A woman who is involved in intimacy willingly versus a woman who is doing so against her will, it just eino dome. You can't compare the two. Meaning, the act itself of a victim of ones is by definition tsar. And it's not external, well, because you threw her down on the floor. No, it's the act itself. So, the Gemara, this is classic Gemara, and I know this is a little bit uncomfortable, and it's absolutely indelicate. But at the same time, the Gemara here is a legal discussion in terms of what exactly is the pain that we're assessing when it comes to the ones. So, Shmuel's suggestion of chavta al karka, it's not accepted. So the Gemara says, Ela Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bavur Tzar Shel Pitzuk Raglayim V'cheinu Amar V'tifaski Es Raglayich L'chol Aver. So the Gemara says it's the separation of her legs, which is done forcefully. Iachim Mefuta Nami. So the Gemara says so by Pitui as well. So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bavur Mashal De Mefuta L'mal Adav Adama L'adam Shamer L'chaver Karashirayim Sheli V'hi Pater. So the Gemara now is trying to understand. So if we're talking about Pisuk Raglayim, so why didn't we say the same thing regarding Mefuta? To which the Gemara's attempted answer is, well, when it comes to Pitui, well, she consents. So you know what that consent also includes? Mechila. It means that she's waiving the money. To which the Gemara says, Shali Davur Ninu. Well, wait a second. As we have now been discussing now for the entirety of this morning, who is the recipient of that of the money? It's not her, it's the father. She's not the Bal Hadavar. She does not own those monies. Those monies go to her father. She simply does not have the right to be mochel on that money. So that can't be the explanation. So Allah Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Baravua Pikosha Bahem Amras Mefuta Ein Latsar. So the Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Baravua, citing women, right, the Pikachos, the smart women. Meaning women who have, you know, who are knowledgeable, experienced, so they say mefuta in latsar. So, and we have to say this, obviously, meaning an explanation of the Mishnah, but over here, the Gemara is trying to wrap its head around and understand why it is that by pitu there's no tsar, because there simply is no tsar. V'aka chazina disle, the Gemara says, okay, but what do you mean? There is a threshold of pain? So Amr Abai, Amr Le'em. So Abai says, so this is what my mother explained to me. And for those of you who have been with the Daf a long time, this is This is standard practice. The Abaye quotes his mother, who is not his mother. It's not his biological mother. It's his foster mother, who he quotes throughout Shas, meaning she was very honest with him. She was a very bright and astute woman, and that which she shared with him, Abaye shares with us all the time. So Amr li Embe Kemay Chamim Areshet Dekarcha, and various analogies are given in the Gemara. And basically, without going through each one of the analogies inside, and me trying to understand the analogy, because I'm not going to understand it. But basically, the analogies all speak to the following idea. It's uncomfortable for the mefuta. It's uncomfortable, but the level of uncomfortable does not hit a threshold of pain. Meaning there's some threshold of pain that warrants a compensatory damage. And when it comes to pitui, it just simply doesn't hit that threshold. So in other words, it's uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's also pleasurable. And so when you balance, counterbalance the level of discomfort versus the level of pleasure, so it doesn't hit the threshold. That's basically what the Gemara is saying. And the Gemara gives a series of analogies to help understand. And again, I'm sure for those who were there understand the analogy much better than I do. I'll translate the words. It's like hot water on a bald head. So Rava Amar Amri Leibas Rav Chista, the daughter of Chista, who happens to be his wife, So explains to him, Ki Rivda de Kusilsa, it's like going to bloodletting. In other words, again, uncomfortable, but doesn't hit a threshold. Rapapa Amar Amali Bas Abasura Kinama Kusha Bechinacha. It's like bread, hard bread that you're chewing on. Okay, again, uncomfortable, but again does not hit a threshold. Fine. Anyway, what comes out from the Gemara is the following. Ones, there's sar. Pitui, there's no sar. I'm not talking about pain, although we are talking about pain. I'm talking about the compensation that goes together with tsar. In other words, tsar hits a threshold in which there now is a mamon obligation. As such, why by ones is there tsar and by pitur there's no tsar? So effectively what the Gemara says is that because when it comes to mefate, since she consents, so therefore the threshold of pain goes down and it's below the threshold. Okay. And to which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning, when it's his wife, so the, is she his wife? Meaning, a man's mefata, a woman. Okay. Does that automatically make them husband and wife? Of course the answer is no. Of course not. In other words, there are now a series of obligations, included in which he now is required to marry her, if in fact she consents. So, but that doesn't automatically create marriage. So the Mishnah's language is difficult. The Mishnah says that the ones, the ma'anes, has to pay immediately. And the mefata only when he divorces her. They're not automatically married. So Amar Abaye, Ema lechishalo ichnos. Oh. So Abaye says that when in fact either she or her father makes the choice of is not going to marry this man, then and only then does he have to pay the knas, as opposed to ma'anes, who has to pay her immediately, regardless of what they choose or what they decide. Meaning that once it goes to court, immediately the court is going to assess the knas. But when it comes to the knas of pitui, so that payment is made, but only when she is electing not to get married. Now the Gemara is going to take a moment. First a braisa. Now that's true when it comes to the kenas. When it comes to boshes and mekam, that's a compensatory damages, so that's paid immediately. Now, as far as rejecting the proposition of marriage, so who has the ability to reject? So either she or her father have the ability to reject. So Bishlam Mafutaksiv, now the Gemara is going to spend some time going over this ability of rejecting marriage, rejecting the option of marriage. By Pitui, the Gemara says, look, here's what we know. So the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim clearly states that the father has the ability to refuse. So fine, the Ma'in Yima'in, the double language, tells me that he can refuse, she can refuse. So ela ones bishlami iksiv losi emidata ela viaminalan. Now when it comes to ones, so we're now moving to Parshas Kiseitse, and there losi hiya, she is going to be his wife. In other words, that tiya means that she has to be in a state of compliance. She has to willingly want to be married to this man. Okay, so I need her consent. That's clear. Ella via minalam, but how do I know that we need his consent? How do I know that we need his consent as well?
Let's try it. We need to come back in.
Okay, sorry, I'm going to check on the sound. How do I know? Okay.
We got disconnected, looks like.
Okay, we're back.
Oh, now we're back.
How do I know that we need her consent as well when it comes to Ones? So I'm a rabbi, shelo yekhol chote niskar. So the Gemara is going to give two approaches in terms of how we know that we need her consent. One explanation of the Gemara is that I need her consent. By her, we have the words velosiyeh. How do I know that I need the father's consent as well? Amar Rabbi Shaloi Chote Niskar. So the Gemara says, because if his consent is not required, so then the Chote, the Ma'anis, is going to get away with something. And he's a Chote. And we don't want him to get away with it. Meaning he's going to be Ma'anis, a girl. And now he's going to be able to marry her against the father's wishes. And again, remember, she's either Katana or she's a Nara. And under normal circumstances, she can only get married with his consent. So he's going to basically get away with something. And he's a Chote. The Gemara, Abai says, nothing doing. And Rava, Amar Kavacham. And Rava says, we don't even have to come on to that. We could just simply argue this logically. Look, let's talk about Pitui. So when it comes to Pitui, so when he eventually, when she finally yields to him, so whose will is he violating? The father's, meaning she eventually capitulated. And meanwhile, in terms of the marriage, whose consent is needed? Both, her and the father. So onesh avar al das aviyav al das atzma lo kol shekein. So when it comes to onesh, so whose will did he violate? Both the father's will and her will. So it stands to reason now that in order for the marriage to occur, so you need consent both of the father and the daughter as well. And then the Gemara just simply points out, Rava lo amar ka Abaye, why didn't Rava like Abaye? Abaye says, shelo yichote niskar. So kevin tekam shalom knas, lav chote niskar hu. So the counter-argument of Rava would be, look, he's not getting away with it. He's paying a substantial fine. So that's not called getting away with it. And Abaye lo amar ka Rava, and Abaye didn't like the logical argument, the kavachomer of Rava, because mefata diu mati ma'akev, avia nami mati ma'akev. So when it comes to mefata, so look, who can also refuse a marriage? The mefata himself can refuse a marriage, meaning he doesn't have to marry her. So the avia nami mati ma'akev, so the father can prevent the marriage as well. But onus diu lo mati ma'akev, avia nami lo mati ma'akev. But if you want a logical argument, we could go the other way. By ones, so the ma'anis doesn't have a choice. Maybe the father also doesn't have a choice as well. Okay, so the logical argument does not lead us to one direction. The logical argument can go in two directions. So that's why Rava does not, that's why Abai doesn't buy into the Kavachomer. Okay, so just to recap the last point of the Gemara. So both the victim of Ones and the victim of Pitoy are going to marry their either rapist or their seducer, but only under the condition that there's consent. And consent for marriage has to be done by both her and her father. And we just went through a series of drashas and possible kavachomers in terms of how we arrive at that conclusion. And without the consent of both of them, so the marriage will not occur. Good. If you want, this is a really difficult issue, but it's really fascinating. And it's such a difficult question, and that's Tosfos Enli Ela Avia Yatzma Minayin. That as part of the requirement for her to get married, so you need consent both for the father and for her as well. So Tosfos asked the question, and I know it's going to be a difficult question, but it's a difficult question both in terms of the question itself and also just to even accept. But Tosfos asks, look, the father has an ability to marry off his daughter to whomever he wants. Right, as part of the father's right to marry off his daughter, so he can elect a husband for his daughter. Obviously, as far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah is expecting him to be out in the interest of his daughter, right? And that's generally speaking the case. And I know this is a little bit uncomfortable, but that's how the Torah operates, where he can marry off to whomever he wants. So Tosfos asks, so I don't understand. So over here, obviously, she's either a katana or she's an ara, right, at the time. And the ma'anis now has an obligation to marry her. And we said we need her consent and we need her father's consent as well. So Tosa says, why do you need her consent? Meaning, once the father consents and the father can marry him off to whomever he wants, so why then do you need her consent? Meaning, you do need her consent, just to be clear. But if the father's ability to marry off whomever he wants is generally true, which it is, so then why over here but in the case of Ones, why do we necessarily need her consent? That's Tosus's question. See Tosus inside. He offers a couple of answers to this question. It's difficult. It's a difficult question. Anyway, Tanya Idach. We're going to go on in the Gemara. We're just going to finish up the daf today. We learned another race. Alpha P. She'amru Ones Nosem Yad. Kishiyotzehu Ein La Alav Klum. So when it comes to the Ones, so he pays the Knas immediately. And upon divorce, in the moment the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. He's not allowed to divorce her. But upon divorce, he doesn't have to pay her ksuva. Why? Because he paid up front. So kishiyotze mimasi mapikla. So ema kishiteitzei ein la alav klum. So immediately the Gemara just simply cleans it up. He can't divorce her. But let's say she wants a divorce. So if she wants a divorce, so she's not locked into this marriage. She can demand a divorce. And then he's going to have to divorce her. And when he does, he doesn't pay her ksuva. And because he already paid on the front end. Now mace. Now let's say he predeceases her. So yatsa kesef knasa b'ksuvasa. So at that point in time, the knas that he already paid. So that will be that's a ksuva already paid up front. And Rabbi Yehuda omer yesh la ksuva mana. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. In other words, there still is a ksuva. It'll be a mana. So by my kemithli, Rabbanan Savri, the Gemara says, let's understand this better. What's at the core of the machlokas? So according to the Chachamim, time of my tekin Rabbanan ksuva kadesh loite kalabein avlotzia. According to the Chachamim, what is the purpose of ksuva? The purpose of ksuva is to make him think and pause before he divorces her, right? Having a large cash settlement at the end of marriage will make him think once, twice, even a third time before divorcing her, meaning the ramifications of having to pay a large sum of money. And so that is the purpose of ksuva. But remember, over here in the case of Ones, he's not allowed to divorce her. The Torah prohibits him to divorce her. So therefore, there doesn't need to be a ksuva at all. And Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Hanami Mitzar La Ad Amra I Lo Be'in Alach. So the Gemara says, okay, but here, what he could do is the following. Even though the Torah prohibits him from divorcing her, but if she asks for a divorce, so then he has to give it to her. And so what he could do is he could torture her, he could torment her, and then she's going to ask for a divorce. So we still need to put in some sort of ksuva at the end of the marriage in order so that he's going to be a little bit more compliant. Meaning knowing that if he divorces her, there's going to be a required settlement of a ksuva, and so therefore it'll basically make him behave a little bit better. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up at the two dots. Ones shows about seat. So let's quickly recap our daf today. First part of today's daf: that a man is ma'anis a woman while she was an ara, and now if she becomes a bogaris and then basin assesses the knas is going to go to her. That's a given that we know. Rachmanis, what if she dies before she becomes a bogaris? So now does the halachic clock keep on ticking after that point in time? Abaye says there's no longer a knas whatsoever. And Rava says, I don't know. Rava says maybe there is a knas, and it's just now a question of, does she graduate to becoming a bogaris even post-mortem? So Abaye and Rava are having a fundamental debate whether or not the knas will in fact still be in effect even after she dies. Abaye says no. Rava says yes. And that's the first part of today's daf. Okay, what is going to detach her from her father financially? So one of two things: either it's going to be she becomes a bogaris, as we just got done describing. Alternatively, she goes through two stages of marriage with a man, erusin and nisuin. At that point in time, she's cut off from her father financially, and then she will become the recipient of the knas. Brings us to the Mishnah on Lamites and Adalf. Here, today's daf, Lamites and Ksuvos. So we're going over the basic differences between Ones and Pitui. They're similar to one another. A man is having relations with a woman. In Ones, she never was compliant. In Pitui, she ends up consenting to the act. And in both circumstances, now the Punishments are similar, but with notable differences. The Mishnah here on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph goes through the notable differences. So let's just quickly highlight. So by Ones, there's Tsar. By Pitui, there is no Tsar. The Gemara discussed that in terms of why that should be. By Ones, he has to pay the Knas immediately. By Pitui, he does not have to pay it immediately. Either one or two things are going to happen by Pitui. Either they agree to marriage, and so the Knas will just simply convert into the Ksuva, or they will agree not to get married, and then he'll have to pay the Knas. But in other words, but first they will see in terms of what they're going to do vis-a-vis the marriage, and then that will determine when the Knas is paid. And then finally, the other major difference between Ones and Pitui is that by Ones, Shoseh Batzitzo, he has to marry her regardless of the fact that he is not attracted to her, and she has physical deformities. It does not matter. He must marry her, again, with her consent, and he may not divorce her. This is not so by Pitui. By Pitui, he can also decide in elect whether he's going to marry her or not. Again, once he decides not to marry her, he's going to have to pay the knas, but if he's in agreement and she's in agreement, so they'll get married. So those are the basic highlighted differences between Ones and Pitui. The Tsar, the Gemara spent some time going from Lamed Tes Amud Aleph to Amud Beis, giving a precise definition of what the Tsar actually is, why there's Tsar by Ones, why there's no Tsar by Pitui. And then the remainder of Lamed Tes Amud Beis, so basically a discussion of who can refuse the marriage, meaning there is veto power in this marriage. So who has the veto power? So the answer here is father and daughter. Both the father and the daughter have veto power to decline and reject this marriage proposal between both the Ones and the Mefate. The only time that he has the also veto power is only by Pitui, meaning by Ones he does not have veto power. He must marry her, assuming that she and the father agree. But in the case of Mefate, he can also decline if he wants. Good. And that basically took us through the Amud Beis. Ad Kan. Tomorrow, Mirza Hashem, we pick it up.